know that I'm here at all. But why Twin is still the only boy I'll ever love. Because although speaking to him is like talking to a scatterbrained saint, every now and then he'll say, in barely a mumble, something that shocks the shit out of me. Today he looks up from his textbook and blinks. Xiomara, you look different. Like something inside of you has shifted. I stop breathing for a moment. Is my body marked by my afternoon with Aman? Will mommy see him on me? I look at Twin, the puzzled smile on his face. I want to tell him he looks different too. Maybe the whole world looks different just because I brushed thighs with a boy. But before I get the words out, Twin opens his big ass mouth. Or maybe it's just your menstrual cycle. It always makes you look a little bloated. I toss a pillow at his head and laugh. Only you, Twin. Only you. Sunday, September 23rd. Communication. Aman and I exchange numbers to talk about lab work. But when I leave Mass, I'm surprised to see he's messaged me. A, so what did you think of the Kendrick? And because mommy is angry whispering at me for sitting out the sacrament again, I'll do another bit of Mass all week if I have to. I cage my squeal behind my teeth. I type a quick response. X, it was cool. We should listen to something else next time. And his response is almost immediate. A. Word. About A. Every time I think about Aman, poems build inside me. Like I've been gifted a box of metaphor Legos that I stack and stack and stack. I keep waiting for someone to knock them over, but no one at home cares about my scribbling. Twin, oblivious, although happier than he usually looks. Mommy, thinking I'm doing homework. Poppy, ignoring me as usual, aka being Poppy. Me, writing pages and pages about a boy and reciting them to myself like a song, like a prayer. Monday, September 24th. Catching feelings. In school, things feel so different. Miss Galliano asks me about the spoken word poetry club, and I try to pretend I forgot about it. But I think she can tell by my face or my shrug that I've been secretly practicing, that I spend more time writing poems or watching performance videos on YouTube than I do on her assignments. At lunch, I sit with the same group I sat with last year, a table full of girls that want to be left alone. I find comfort in apples and my journal as the other girls read books over their lunch trays or draw manga or silently text boyfriends, sharing space but not words. In bio, when I lower my ass into the seat next to Aman, I wonder if I should sit slower or faster, if I should write neater or run a fingertip across his knuckles when Mr. Bildner isn't looking. Instead, Aman and I pass notes on scrap paper, talking about our days, our parents, our favorite movies and songs, and the next time we'll go to the smoke park. If my body was a country club soda bottle, it's one that's been shaken and dropped, and at any moment it's gonna pop open and surprise the whole damn world. Notes with Aman. A. You ever mess with anyone in school? X. Nah, never really been into anyone. A. We not cute enough for you? X. Nope, you ain't. A. Damn, shit all my whole life. X. You just want me to say you cute. A. Do you think I am? X. I'm still deciding. Tuesday, September 25th. What I didn't say to Caridad in confirmation class. I wanted to tell her that if Aman were a poem, he'd be written slumped across the page. Sharp lines and a witty punchline written on a bodega brown paper bag. His hands writing gently on our lab reports turned into imagery. His smile the sweetest uncliched simile. He is not elegant enough for a sonnet, too well thought out for a free write, taking too much space in my thoughts to ever be a haiku. Lectures. Mira muchacha, I'm not sure if your eyes can roll so hard in your head that a stranger could use them as a pair of dice, but if they can, someone just bad lucked on snake eyes. When I was waiting for you, I saw you whispering to Caridad in the middle of your class. Do not let yourself get distracted so that you lead yourself and others from la palabra de Dios. And although the night has cooled down, the fading summer heat, sweat breaks out on my forehead. My tongue feels swollen, dry, and heavy with all I can't say. Miss Galeano's sticky note on top of assignment one. Xiomara, although you say you're only dressing your thoughts in poems, I found several of your assignments quite poetic. I wonder why you don't consider yourself a poet. I love that your brother gave you a notebook you still use. You really should come to the poetry club. I have a feeling you'd get a lot out of it. G. Sometimes someone says something, and their words are like the catch of a gas stove. The click, click, while you're waiting for it to light up and then flame big and blue. That's what happens when I read Miss Galeano's note. A bright light lit up inside me. But now, I crumple up the note and assignment and throw them out in the cafeteria trash can, because every day the idea of poetry club is like Eve's apple, something you can want but can't have. Friday, September 28th. Listening. Today, when Aman and I sit on the bench, I wait for him to pass me his headphones, but he plays with my fingers instead. No music today, X. Instead, I want to hear you. Read me something. And I instantly freeze, because I never, never read my work. But Aman just sits patiently. And with my heart thumping, I pull my notebook out. You better not laugh. But he just leans back and closes his eyes. And so I read to him, quietly, a poem about Bobby. My heart pumps hard in my chest, and the page trembles when I turn it, and I rush through all the words, and when I'm done, I can't look at Aman. I feel as naked as if I'd undressed before him, but he just keeps fiddling with my fingers. Makes me think of my mother being gone. You got bars, X. I'm down to listen to them anytime. Mother business. Aman and I don't really talk about our families like that. I know the rules. You don't ask about people's parents. Most folks got only one person at home, and that person isn't even always the egg or the sperm donor. But I feel like I said too much and too little about Papi, and now I want to know more about Aman's family. Can you tell me about your mom's? Why is she gone? His mouth looks zipped up silent. We are quiet for a while, and there's no noise to cover my shiver. Even lost in his thoughts, Aman notices, tucks my hand clasped with his inside his jacket pocket. I'm glad the cold breeze is a good excuse for why my cheeks go pink. He finally looks at me, his eyes trying to read something in my face. I don't expect him to ever answer. And then he does. My mom's was a beautiful woman. She and Pops married when they were teens. He came here first and sent for us. I was old enough when I came here that I can remember Trinidad, the palm tree behind my grandma's house, the taste of backyard mangoes, the song and the voice every time someone spoke. I was young enough to learn how my accent could be rolled tight between my lips until this country smoked it out into that clipped, good-accented English. My mother never came, you know. She would call every day at first, and always tell me the same thing. She was handling affairs. We'll be together soon. She calls every year on my birthday. I've stopped asking her when she's coming. Pops and I get on just fine. I've learned not to be angry. Sometimes the best way to love someone is to let them go. Warmth. Aman and I walk from our park, but instead of walking straight to the train, we skip the station. Then the next, we are silent the whole walk. Without words, we are in agreement that we'll walk as far as we can this way. My hand held in his coat pocket, each of us keeping the other warm against the quiet chill. Tuesday, October 9th. The next couple of weeks. Pass by like an express train, and before I know it, October has cooled the air, and we're all pressed into hoodies and jackets. I try to avoid Miss Galeano, who always reminds me I'm more than welcome to join Poetry Club. Amon and I don't share a lunch period, but we walk together to the train after school, listening to music or just enjoying the quiet. I think we both want to do more, but I'm still too shy and he's still too Amon, which means he never presses too hard and I have to wonder if he's being respectful or isn't feeling me like that. But he wouldn't be hanging out with me so much if he wasn't feeling me, right? And although I still want to stay seated during communion, I get up every time, put the wafer in my mouth, then slip it beneath the pew, my hands shaking less and less every time I do. The hardest thing has been Tuesdays. I sit in confirmation class knowing I could be in poetry club instead, or writing, or doing anything other than trying to unhear everything Father Sean says. And I do a good job of pretending. At least until the day I open my usually silent mouth and decide to ask Father Sean about Eve. Eve, Father Sean explains, could have made a better choice. Her story is a parable to teach us how to deal with temptation, resist the apple, and for some reason, either because of what I'm learning in school and in real life, I think it all just seems like bullshit. So I say so, out loud, to Father Sean. Next to me, Caridad goes completely still. I think the story of Genesis is mad stupid. God made the earth in 7 days, including humans, right? But in biology, we learn dinosaurs existed on earth for millions of years before other species, unless the 7 days is a metaphor. But what about humans evolving from apes, unless Adam's creation was a metaphor too? And about this apple, how come God didn't explain why they couldn't eat it? He gave Eve curiosity, but didn't expect her to use it? Unless the apple is a metaphor. Is the whole Bible a poem? What's not a metaphor? Did any of it actually happen? I catch my breath, look around the room. Caridad is bright red. The younger kids are silent, watching like it's a WWE match. And Father Sean's face has turned hard as the marble altar. Why don't you and I talk after class, Xiomara? As we are packing to leave. Xiomara, if Father Sean says something to your moms, it's going to be a hot mess. X, so what? Aren't we supposed to be curious about the things that we're told? C, listen, don't come at me like that, Xiomara. I'm just trying to help you. X, I know, but they were just questions. Aren't priests obligated to confidentiality? C, that wasn't a confession, Xiomara. X doesn't say, wasn't it? Father Sean tells me I seem distracted in confirmation class. Tells me perhaps there is something I'd like to discuss besides Eve. Tells me it's normal to be curious about the world. Tells me Catholicism invites curiosity. Tells me I should find solace in a forgiving religion. Tells me the church is here for me if I need it. Tells me maybe I should have a conversation with my mother. Tells me open and honest dialogue is good for growth. Tells me a lot of things, but none of them an answer to anything I asked. Answers. After Father Sean's lecture, he seems to expect answers from me. I stare at the picture behind his desk. It's him in a boxing ring holding a pair of gold gloves. You still fight, Father Sean? He cocks his head at me, and his lips quirk up a bit. Every now and then I get into a ring to stay in shape. I definitely don't fight as much as I used to. Not every fight can be fought with gloves, Xiomara. I stand. I tell Father Sean I won't ask about Eve again. I leave church before he asks me something I can't answer. Rough draft assignment 2. Last paragraphs of my biography. And that's how Xiomara bare-knuckled fought the world into calling her correctly by her name, into not expecting her to be a saint, into respecting her as a whole grown-ass woman. She knew since she was little, the world would not sing her triumphs, but she took all of the stereotypes and put them in a chokehold until they breathed out the truth. Xiomara may be remembered as a lot of things, a student, a miracle, a protective sister, a misunderstood daughter, but most importantly, she should be remembered as always working to become the warrior she wanted to be. Final draft of assignment 2. what I actually turn in. Xiomara Batista, Monday, October 15th. Miss Galliano, last paragraphs of my biography, final draft. Xiomara's accomplishments amounted to several key achievements. She was a writer who went on to create a nonprofit organization for first-generation teenage girls. Her center helped young women explain to their parents why they should be allowed to date and go away for college and move out when they turned 18. Also, how to discover what they wanted to do in life. It was an organization that helped thousands of young women, and although they never built a statue outside the center, she would have hated that, they did hang a super blown-up selfie of her in the main office. Since her parents were distraught that the neighborhood had changed, that there were no more Latino families, and that the bodegas and sastrería were all closed down, Xiomara used her earnings to buy them a house in the Dominican Republic. Although she was never married and didn't have children, Xiomara was happy with a big pit bull and a brownstone in Harlem, not too far from the neighborhood where she was raised. Her twin brother lived down the street. Hands. In bio, Aman's hand has started finding mine inside the desk. I hope I don't sweat as his finger fiddles across my palm. I wonder if he's nervous like me, if he's fronting like me, pretending I've played with someone's hand and done even more. And even though I've dreamt about him before, there's something different about touching a guy in real life, in the flesh, inside a classroom, more than once, his hand lighting a match inside my body. Fingers. In bed at night, my fingers search a heat I have no name for, sliding into a center, finding a hidden core or stem or maybe the root. I'm learning how to caress and breathe at the same time, how to be silent and feel something grow inside me. And when it all builds up, I sink into my mattress. I feel such a release, such a relief. I feel such a shame. Settle like a blanket, covering me head to toe. To make myself feel this way is a dirty thing, right? Then why does it feel so good? Tuesday, October 16th. Talking church. So you go to church a lot, right? Aman asks as we walk to the train. And any words I have suicide jump off my tongue, because this is it. Either he's going to think I'm a freak of the church who's too holy to do anything, or he's going to think I'm a church freak trying to get it on with the first boy who tries. X? And I try to focus on that. How much I love this new nickname. How it's such a small letter but still fits all of me. Xiomara. I finally turn to look at him. Yeah, my mom's is big into church and I go with her into confirmation classes. So your mom's is big into the church, but you... what are you big into? And I let loose the breath that I was holding. And before I know I'm going to say them, the words have already escaped my mouth. You already know I'm into poetry. And he nods, looks at me, and seems to decide something. So what's your stage name, Xiomara? And I'm so glad he's changed the subject that I answer before I think. I'm just a writer. But maybe I'd be the poet X. He smiles. I think that fits you perfectly. Swoon. In science, we learned that thermal conductivity is how heat flows through some materials better than others. But who knew words, when said by the right person, by a boy who raises your temperature, move heat like nothing else, shoot a shock of warmth from your curls to your toes. Telephone. Twin doesn't ask who I'm texting so late into the night that the glow of my phone is the only light in the whole apartment, and I don't offer to tell him or to hide my texting beneath my blanket. I've never been super friendly, and Caridad is the only person we really talk to unless I'm working on a class project or something. But now I have Aman, sweet and patient Aman, who sends me Drake lyrics that he says remind him of me and asks me to whisper him poems in return, who never grows tired of my writing and always asks for one more. Twin doesn't ask who I'm texting, though I know he's wondering, because I'm wondering who he's been texting to. The reason why he's smiling more now and giggles in the dark, the glow of his phone letting me know we both have secrets to keep. over breakfast. Twin is singing underneath his breath as he pours milk into his cereal. I watch him as I sip on a cup of coffee. He slices up an apple and gives me half. He knows they're my favorite, and I'm surprised he's being so thoughtful. Twin, you've been smiling more lately. This person got a name. And my words make the smile slip and slide right off his face. He shakes his head at me, pushes his cereal away. He plays with the tablecloth. Is that why you've been smiling so much? And to cover my blush, I gulp down the last of my coffee. I'm just happy. You know what we should plan? Our scary movie date for Halloween. You and me. And we both say at the same time, and caridad. Angry cat, happy ex. C. Girl, this angry cat meme reminded me of you. X. Shaking my head. You're dumb. I was just about to text you. Scary movie Halloween date? C. Duh. How you doing? How's that boy you feeling? X. I'm good. He's fine. C. Why? Dot, dot, dot. X. I know you don't approve. C. Seal. I just don't want you getting in trouble, but I like seeing you happy. Like this happy cat meme. Friday, October 19th. About being in like. The smoke park is empty again, and I'm so glad we finally have another half day. The afternoon stretches before us. No mommy to call me, she's still at work. Twins' genius school runs on a different schedule. Caridad never texts during class. It's just me and Amon and his hand brushing my cheek to insert an earbud. You ever smoked a blunt? I shake my head. Word. Drake is better when you lit, but we can listen to him anyways. And so I shut my eyes, pressing my shoulder closer to his as he settles his iPhone between us, as he settles his hand on my thigh. Music. For A. Placing my head in the crook of your neck makes me happy to be alive. Eyes closed, hands clasped, don't breathe, and maybe we will live like this forever. It'd be gibberish, but everything you whisper sounds like poetry. I missed you. This was supposed to be a question, not a poem, confession, or whatever it's become. I just wanted to know if you would listen with me to the sound of our heartbeats. Tuesday, October 23rd. Ring the alarm. The day that becomes the day starts real regular. Same schedule and nothing changed till last period bio. It's the first Tuesday since the Eve episode, and with 30 minutes left of school, a fire alarm goes off. Mr. Bildner sighs and stops the PowerPoint that was showing us how Darwin figured out finches. Amon squeezes my hand beneath the desk and stands, slings his bag across his shoulders. He never puts it in his locker. Before I know what I'm saying, the words skip like small rocks out my mouth. We should go to the park. They sink in silence. He cocks his head. You know Bildner's gonna take attendance if this is a false alarm. The class lines up to exit as we scrunch together. My ass bumps Amon's front. I don't move away. I whisper over my shoulder. We should still go. Amon's finger pulls on one of my curls. I didn't know you liked Drake enough to get caught cutting. I lean back against him, feel his body pressed against mine. Drake isn't the one that I like. The day. We are side by side, sitting on our park bench. Amon slides his arm around my shoulder and pulls me closer to him. Today there are no headphones, no music, just us. He brushes his lips across my forehead, and I shiver from something other than cold. His fingers tip up my chin. My hands instantly get sweaty, and I can't look at him, so I stare at his eyebrows, cleanly arched, no stray hairs, prettier than any girl's, and I lean in, trying to figure out if he waxes or threads. Then he's leaning in, too, and I know I have one moment to make a decision, so I press my lips to his. His mouth is soft against mine. Gently, he bites my bottom lip, and then his tongue slides in my mouth. It's messier than I thought it'd be. He must notice because his tongue slows down and my heart is one of Darwin's finches learning to fly. Wants. As much as boys and men have told me all of the things they would like to do to my body. This is the first time I've actually wanted some of those things done. At my train stop. My train pulls slowly into the station, so I take my hand out of Aman's. He looks at me with a question on his face, and I can feel the heat creep up my cheeks. He's asking me something, but I can't hear a word he's saying because I keep getting distracted by his lips and the fact that I now know how they taste. X, did you hear me? I'll text you later. Maybe we can go out this weekend? To Ruben's Halloween party? I hop off the train without giving him an answer, without waving at him through the window, with too many things to say and nothing to say at all. What I don't tell Aman. I can't date. I can't be seen on my block with boys. I can't have a boy call my cell phone. I can't hold hands with a boy. I can't go to his house. I can't invite him to mine. I can't hang out with him and his friends. I can't go to the movies with any boy other than Twin. I can't go to teen night at the club. I can't have a boyfriend. I can't fall in love. Whenever we text late at night, I avoid mentioning making plans. I tell him, I just want to live in the moment, because I don't want to tell him all the things I can't do. But I also shouldn't kiss a boy in the smoke park, and yet, I did that too. Kiss stamps. Later, when I walk into confirmation class, I know I'm wearing Aman's kiss like a bright red sweater. Anyone who looks at me will know I know what it means to want in that way, because I didn't want to stop kissing, and we didn't, until his hands moved under my shirt and I jumped at the chill. Maybe I jumped at something else, guilt, how fast we're moving, I don't know, but I knew it was time to stop, but I didn't want to. I mean, I guess I did. It's confusing to know you shouldn't be doing something, that it might go too far, but still wanting to do it anyway. I don't whisper with Caridad or make eye contact with anyone or question Father Sean or look at the cross-brain and all-knowing God who, if he exists, saw everything, everything that happened in the smoke park and how much I enjoyed it. The last 15-year-old. Okay, I know. It's not that deep to kiss a guy. It's just a kiss, some tongue. Little kids kiss all the time. Probably not with tongue. That'd be weird. Boys have wanted to kiss me since I was 11. And back then, I didn't want to kiss them. And then it was grown-ass boys or legit men giving me sneaky looks. And mommy told me I'd have to pray extra so my body didn't get me into trouble. And I knew then what I'd known since my period came. My body was trouble. I had to pray the trouble out of the body God gave me. My body was a problem, and I didn't want any of these boys to be the ones to solve it. I wanted to forget I had this body at all. So when everyone in middle school was playing truth or dare, or whatever other excuse to get their first kiss, I was hiding in big sweaters. I was hiding in hard silence, trying to turn this body into an invisible equation. Until now. Now I want Aman to balance my sides, to leave his fingerprints all over me, to show all his work. Concerns. Father Sean asks me if things are going well, and for a second I think he knows about the kiss, that through some divine premonition or psychic ability, he knows. But then I see him glance at the altar, at the covered chalice full of wine, the plate holding the soft circles of the body of Christ. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I don't say. I just shrug and look anywhere else. We all doubt ourselves sometimes, he tells me. I look him straight in the eye. Even you? He gives me a small smile that makes him look younger. You ever look at someone that you've known your whole life, and it's almost like their face reconfigures itself right in front of your eyes? Father Sean's smile makes him look different, and I can imagine the young man he once was. Especially me. My whole life I wanted to be a boxer, an athlete. I thought my body was my way out of the terrible circumstances I lived in. Instead, it was the body of Christ that got me out. But sometimes I miss my island, my family. My mother died and I didn't get there in time to say goodbye. We all doubt ourselves and our path sometimes. I want to say I'm sorry, to bring back the young Father Sean smile, but instead I merely nod. Some things don't need words. What Twin knows. Twin, you know Father Sean's mom died? Twin looks up distracted from his phone, where his fingers have been rapidly texting. I try to read over his shoulder, but he flips his screen down on the desk. Yeah, she died 3 summers ago. Why are you bringing that up? And I don't know how I didn't know. How I didn't notice Father Sean gone, or notice the person who took over his sermons. Have I been checked out of church for that long? I don't ask Twin any of these questions. He's already back on his phone. Who you been texting so much lately? The question shoulders past my lips, and I stop with one of my headphones halfway into my ear. Twin has never kept secrets from me. His thumbs go still on his phone, and he gives me a long, long look. Xiomara, we don't have to do this, right? Maybe with everyone else we need to explain, but we both know we're messing around, and that Mommy and Papi will kill us if they find out. And I want to nod my head and shake it no at the same time. Our parents always say that as la niña de la casa, expectations for me are different than for Twin. If he brought a girl home, they would probably applaud him. I don't know what they would do if the person he brought home was not a girl. Hanging over my head. The next couple of days, I wait for Aman to bring up the Halloween party. But he holds my hand in bio, walks me to the train in the afternoons, kisses me goodbye before I exit to the platform, and doesn't mention the party again. Maybe he doesn't want me to go anymore? Friday, October 26th. Friday. Is usually my favorite day of the week. But this morning, I got a text from Aman that flavored my whole day sour. A, got a doc appointment. Not coming to school. See you at the party. And I know it's going to be a long 2 days between now and when I'll see him again. Unless I figure out a way. Black and blue. What kind of twin am I who didn't even notice when my own brother comes home with a black eye? I mean, I noticed, but not until I heard Mommy yelling at him tonight while he was getting something from the fridge. ¿Y eso, muchacho? ¿Quién te pegó? No me digas que fue Xiomara. But I'm already halfway to the kitchen, then pulling his chin from her grip, inspecting his eye myself. I don't say a word to him, and Twin's face flinches in my hand. No es nada. It's nothing. It was just a misunderstanding. And although he's answering her, his eyes are pleading with me. Yeah, looks like some asshole misunderstood your face for a punching bag. Mommy looks back and forth between us. Probably only catching every other word of the English, but even she knows when it's a twin thing. Tight. I'm so heated with Twin for not telling me somewhat at school was bothering him that I stop speaking. It's a silent Friday. On Saturday, I wake up with a different feeling tightening my belly. I want to go to the party. I want to see Aman. The boys in my life will drive me crazy one way or another. Saturday, October 27th. Excuses. X. Hey, so, would you be really mad if I didn't go with you and Twin to the movies? C. Is this about the boy? X. Kinda. I'm telling my mother I'm hanging out with you. I'll be home at the same time as you both. C. Is he making you lie to your mother? X. He's not making me do anything except meet him at a party. C. Be safe, Seal. Your brother's been acting strange lately. Are you sure he's coming to the movies? X. Yeah, he has a lot going on. Don't ask about his black eye, but he'll be there. C. Black eye? Did you hit him, Xiomara? X. Why does everyone keep asking that? No, but I'm gonna hit the dude who did. C. Don't make it any worse. You know your brother hates confrontation. X. Yeah. Thanks for not being mad at me. C. Just don't get pregnant. I'm too young to be a godmother. Costume ready. I leave with Twin to the movies, although we go in different directions once we get to the corner. He walks toward Caridad's house, and I walk to the train station on my way up to the Heights. A block away from Ruben's house, I sneak into a Starbucks bathroom and put on green eyeshadow, fluff my curls, tug on the hem of Twins Green Lantern tee. It fits tight around my boobs and shows some midriff. I'm glad mommy didn't ask to see what I had on under my jacket. And voila, a half-ass superhero costume. Ruben's house party. When I get to the address in Washington Heights, I know I'm too early. There are only a handful of people there who, like me, made bootleg attempts at a costume. I see a couple of people I know from school, but no one I would hang out with. This is a party crowd, the loudest, the boldest, the ones who smoke during the school day and drink their parents' mama Juana on the weekend. Someone hands me a cup of fruity drink, but I put it down on the TV stand, lean against the wall. I don't look at the clock blinking from the DVD player. I don't look at my phone. I've got an alarm set so I know when to leave. For now, I just listen to the noise, to the music, ignore the stares of a group of boys by the speakers. When someone brushes my hand, I brace myself, tighten my jaw, but when I turn, it's Amon, playing with my fingers, smiling. I didn't think you were gonna make it. Do you want something to drink? I shake my head no, and take in his outfit. He went all out, face painted green, waves spinning, t-shirt stuffed with something, all his lean self trying to look like the Hulk. I can't hold my laughter, and he only smiles wider. We are meant to be, he whispers. We both chose green superheroes. Someone lowers the lights. Amon tugs on my hand. Dance with me? One dance. When Amon asks, my heart starts thumping, because this isn't bachata or merengue or something with coordinated steps and distance. This song is the kind you get close for. I push off the wall and Amon shifts in front of me, his hands holding my hips. I close my eyes and wipe my sweaty palms on the back of his shirt. We are pressed against each other, swaying, his mouth near my neck. The shoulder pads under his costume give me something to hold on to, and I'm glad we have at least the padding between us. Then his leg is between mine, and we're dancing exactly the way people do in music videos, like if they weren't wearing clothes, they'd be, you know. I can feel all of him, not as scrawny as I thought. When the song is over, another reggae one comes on and Amon rotates so now he's behind me. His body grinds against mine and it feels so good. I push away from him. I need some air. Stoop sitting with Amon. Outside of Ruben's building, the Heights is on fire. People dressed in all kinds of costumes, laughing and yelling and singing. You would think it was morning and not 9:30 p.m. Amon holds my hand in his, but every time I look at him, I'm afraid my cheeks will burst bright red, so I don't. And then he drops the bomb. I don't live too far from here. And I don't know if he means he wants me to go to his house or if he's just talking to talk. Isn't your father home? I really hope his father's home. Amon shakes his head, tells me his father works tonight. I pull my hand from his. I can't stop my fingers from trembling. I don't have to fake when I tell him I don't feel great, that I should get home and make tea or something. I get up to leave, but before I do, Amon tugs on my hand. Read me a poem, X. I want to remember your voice when I think about tonight. And then he's grinning again and pulls me down beside him. Convos with Caridad. X, I'm on my way home. C, good, because Xavier and I've been standing on the corner forever. X, thanks again. I know you hate lying. C, yeah, it better have been worth it. Was it worth it? X, it was a lot. I have a lot of feelings, but it was fine. C, X, it just can't last. Something is gonna go wrong. I'm not allowed to be happy while breaking all rules. C, maybe you shouldn't break them? X, oh, Caridad, I can't wait until you like someone. I'll make sure to send you all these wise-ass texts, too. C, girl, bye. With your hot-headed self, you'll never be as wise as me. Sunday, October 28th. Braiding. I spent the entire mass thinking about Amon, and I can tell mommy is going to lecture me for not paying any attention. But thank goodness, as we're leaving church, Caridad tugs on my hand. Señora Batista, is it okay if Xiomara comes and braids my hair? I can tell Mommy wants to chew me out, but she can never say no to Caridad. At her house, Caridad sits between my legs, and I run the comb through her long, thick hair. I learned to braid when Mommy didn't have time to do mine anymore. Two long braids, I can make you look like Cardi B for Halloween. I love the reality TV star, but she's everything Caridad isn't. Caridad gives me a smirk and nods her head. Sure, I'll put on old episodes of Love & Hip Hop so you can feel inspired. Even after I'm done braiding, we sit and watch two more episodes. Maybe the only thing that has to make sense about being somebody's friend is that you help them be their best self on any given day, that you give them a home when they don't want to be in their own. At least I have a feeling if I asked, that's exactly what Caridad would say. Tomorrow is going to be a long-ass day, but here and now, it's okay. Monday, October 29th. Fights. On Monday afternoon, I lean against the gate of Twins Genius School. When Amon asked why I was taking a train downtown, I kissed it off, but I'm sure he'll bring it up later. So much happened this weekend, but still I prepared myself for what I knew I would have to do this afternoon. Twin gets out an hour later than I do, and as the kids start filing out after the bell, I spot Twin shuffling my way. But he's not alone. He's with a tall, red-haired boy, with fingers the color of milk that brush lint off my brother's sweater softly, the way Amon sometimes squeezes my hand. Xavier. Twin's name never leaves my lips, but somehow he hears me think it. His head pops in my direction like a bobblehead doll. He stumbles back from the white boy so fast he almost trips on his shoes. I look between them, confirming what I've always known. Twin rushes my way and speaks into my ear, Xiomara, what are you doing here? And I don't need to tell him. I came to knock my knuckles into someone's face, to redeem his black eye, to let them know Twin isn't alone. You shouldn't have come to my school. I don't need you to fight for me anymore. There is a balloon where my heart used to be, and it whooshes air out at the prick of his words. I look at the boy who gazes at Twin with love all over his face. Leave it alone, Xiomara. I think Twin says, but it sounds more like, leave me alone. Scrapping. I'm not stupid, you know. I know I'm not going to be 30 fighting grown-ass men. I know I'm not always going to be bigger and meaner than the boys in my grade. I know one day they'll be stronger and hit back harder. I know I won't always intimidate girls with my height, with my hard hands. I know I won't be able to defend Twin forever. But I thought when it happened, it would be because he would fight for himself, not just find someone else to protect him. What we don't say. On the train ride home, Twin steps into his feelings, like they're a gated off room I don't have visitation rights to. He spends the entire time playing chess on his phone. Twin, I know you've probably felt this way your whole entire life, but if Mommy and Papi find out about White Boy, they will legit kill you. His fingers move a rook across the screen, attacking some imaginary opponent. Cody, not White Boy. And I know what Mommy and Papi will say, what you're going to say too. But I don't even know what I'm going to say. I only know I've always wanted to keep him safe, but this makes him a target, and I can't defend against the arrows I know are coming. Gay. I've always known, without knowing, that Twin was. We never said, I think he was scared. I think I was too. He's Mommy's miracle. He would become her sin. I guess I hoped, if I didn't ever really know, it would be like he wasn't. But maybe my silence just made him feel more alone. Maybe my silence condones the ugly things people think. All that I know is that I don't know how to move forward from this. Feeling off when Twin is mad. A part of me rebels against the discord. It might sound dumb, and not all twins are like us, but when he's angry, it throws me off. I can't think of anything but him being upset, and I'm afraid anything I say will make him angrier. I don't even know what I did wrong. I've been fighting dudes for Twin my whole life. Why did he think I wouldn't show up at his school? Not even Amon's emoji smiley faces and links to Ja Rule's old romantic rap videos are enough to make me feel better. Rough draft of assignment 3. Describe someone you consider misunderstood by society. When I was little, Mommy was my hero because she barely spoke English and wasn't born here, but she didn't let that stop her from defending herself if she got cut in line at the grocery store or from fighting to get Twin into a genius school. Because I've never seen her ask my father for money or complain about her job, because her hands will be scraped raw from work, but she still folds them to pray. When I was little, Mommy was my hero, but then I grew breasts, and although she was always extra hard on me, her attention became something else, like she wanted to turn me into the nun she could never be. Final draft of assignment 3. What I actually turn in. Xiomara Batista, Tuesday, November 6th. Miss Galliano. Describe someone misunderstood by society. Final draft. I've always found Nicki Minaj compelling. Although she gets a bad reputation for being overly sexual and making songs like Anaconda, I think the persona she portrays in her videos is really different from who she is in real life. So the question should be, does society distinguish between who someone actually is and the alter ego they present to the public? For example, Miss Minaj may have lyrics that some people feel are a bad influence, but then she's always tweeting people to stay in school. I also think society puts a negative spin on her music by saying she's allowing men to dictate how she raps, but a lot of her music shows a positive outlook on physical beauty. She's well-developed, and people always have a lot of negative things to say about her because of her body and how she talks about it and sex, but instead of being ashamed or writing something different, she celebrates her curves and what she wants. And all that is besides the fact that she also got bars, by which I mean to say she's very artistically talented. She's not just a great female rapper, she's a great rapper, period. Miss Minaj has held her own on tracks with some of the best rappers in the world. She is a woman in a male-dominated world making albums that go platinum. I know she's not considered most women's role model like Eleanor Roosevelt or Mother Teresa or even Beyonce, but I think she stands for girls who don't fit into society's cookie-cutter mold. Misunderstood? Perhaps by some, but those of us who can relate, we get her. Wednesday, November 7th. Announcements. At the end of class, Ms. Galliano brings in a student from her poetry club. He's a Puerto Rican kid I've seen around, with glasses and a kind smile. He says his name is Chris, and he invites us to join the club. Then he does a short poem using his hands and his volume to grab our attention. Ms. Galliano looks on like a proud mama bear, and the class gives him half-hearted claps and a dap or two. Chris hands out flyers for the citywide slam and personally invites everyone to come to a poetry club meeting. The slam is 3 months away, February 8th. Ms. Galliano says it's open to the public, and even if we don't sign up, we should attend and support Chris and our peers. And I feel my face get hot. I should be there. I could compete. Ice skating. When I was little, Mommy would take Twin and me ice skating every year for our birthday, January 8th. She would work the holidays to make sure she had the afternoon off. I always think of ice skating as a gift. And although Twin is super uncoordinated, and I've always been a tank in tights, we were real good at skating. It was one thing we both did right. We took to the ice, falling only a few times before we streamed easily in the circular rink. Mommy would post up behind the glass, never rented skates herself, just watched this turn in circle after circle. This was a tradition for years. Until one day it just wasn't. Until Twin and I stopped asking. Until I forgot what it felt like to slice through the cold. Maybe like a knife, but mostly like a girl, skating with her arms out, laughing with her brother while her mother took pictures in the falling snow. Until I completely forgot about the skating adventures we used to go on until Amon asks me to go skating. I tell him I have to be home straight after school, and half days won't give us enough time. What about tomorrow? No school since teachers are grading exams. And I'm stuck. It is a day off, and one when Mommy will be at work, so it's not like she'll know I'm not home. I begin to shake my head, and then I remember how free I felt on the ice. How wonderful it was, and I know I want Amon to see me feeling all that. Love. Turns out Amon loves winter sports. It's the last thing I would have imagined, but he names professional snowboarders and skiers and figure skaters in the same tone reserved for his favorite rappers. ex, I'm serious. Even made Pops pay for a special TV channel so I could keep up. At first, I think he's joking, but the way his eyes light up, I can tell this is really a passion of his. Maybe like my writing, a secret thing he's loved that he never felt he could talk about. He tells me that in Trinidad, he was fascinated by snow, and watching the Winter Olympics was the closest he could get, and then that became a bigger love. X, I'm letting you know right now, I'm nice with the skates. Prepare to fall in love tomorrow. And my heart stutters over the word. How could I do anything but agree to the date? Thursday, November 8th. Around and around we go. The next day shines perfect. I invite Twin to come along, but he only turns his back to me and keeps on pretending to sleep. He's still upset about my showing up to his school, and I'm trying to give him space. Amon is near the skate rental when I arrive, and all around us kids are walking and laughing. He holds out a pair of skates, and after we're laced up and have rented a locker, we walk awkwardly to the ice. I take a deep breath at the pang of nostalgia. So many good memories at Lasker Rink. I hope to add one more. I step onto the ice and it all comes back to me. Amon hasn't moved, and I backward skate, slowly crooking my finger at him. I blush immediately. I'm never the one to make the first move, but he seems to like it and steps onto the ice. He starts off slow, and we both face forward, skating side by side. Then it's like something comes over him, and I realize he wasn't lying. He's fucking amazing. Amon gets low and gains speed, then does turns and figure eights. I wait for him to start flipping and somersaulting, but he just slows down and grabs my hand. We skate that way for a while, then exit the rink to eat nachos. Amon, how did you learn all that? You're so, so good. He grins at me and shrugs. I came here and practiced a lot. My pops never wanted to put me in classes, said it was too soft. And now his smile is a little sad. And I think about all the things we could be if we were never told our bodies were not built for them. After skating. When Amon walks me to the train, he immediately pulls me to him. We never kiss so publicly, but with his lips on mine, I realize I want the same thing. And I know that it's stupid, too easy to run into someone from the block or one of mommy's church friends, but I just want to keep this moment going. When he tugs on my hand and pulls me even closer, I let him make me forget Twin's anger, confirmation class, the train smell, the people around us, or the stand clear of the closing doors, please. And I know people are probably staring, probably thinking horny high school kids can't keep their hands to themselves. But I don't care, because when our lips meet for those three stops before I get off, it's beautiful and real and what I wanted. We are probably the only thing worth watching anyways. Maybe we're doing our train audience a favor, reminding them of first love. This body on fire. Walking home from the train, I can't help but think, Amon's made a junkie out of me. Begging for that hit, eyes wide with hunger, blood on fire, licking the flesh, waiting for the refresh of his mouth. Fiend begging for an inhale, whatever the price, just so long as it's real nice. Real, real nice. Blood on ice, ice, waiting for that warmth, that heat, that fire. He's turned me into a fiend, waiting for his next word, hanging on his last breath, always waiting for the next time. The shit and the fan. I hear mommy's yelling through the apartment door before I even turn the key. Which isn't right, because she shouldn't be home yet. It isn't even 4 o'clock. I mean, I did miss my stop because I didn't want to quit Amon's kisses. Se lo estaba comiendo, had her tongue down his throat, some little dirty boy. I had to get off the train a stop early. And I know then, mommy's eyes were a fan, and my makeout session on the train was the shit hitting it. Lucky me, she's yelling from her bedroom, and I let myself into the one I share with Twin, click the door shut and slide down to put my head between my legs. I don't know how much time has passed before Twin pushes open the door, and even through the wall of his silence, he understands something is wrong. He crouches next to me, but I can't warn him of the storm that's coming. I can't even be grateful he's speaking to me again. I try to make all the big of me small, small, small. Miracles. My parents are still yelling in the bedroom, and because I never yell back at them, I don't scream at my father when he calls me a cuero. I don't yell how the whole block whispers when I walk down the street about all the women who made a cuero out of him, but men are never called cueros. I don't yell anything, because for the first time in a long time, I'm praying for a miracle, pinching myself and hoping this is all one bad dream, trying to unhear my mother turn my kissing ugly, my father call me the names all the kids have called me since I grew breasts. God, if you're a thing with ears, please. Please. Fear. Seal, what did you do now? I don't look at Twin, because if I look at him, I'll cry. And if I cry, he'll cry. And if he cries, he'll get yelled at by Poppy for crying. He pushes up to standing, then kneels in front of me again like his body doesn't know what to do. Seal? And I want to kick the fear in his voice. Seal, do they know you're home yet? Maybe you can sneak out through the fire escape. I won't tell, I'll... But mommy's chancletas beat against the floorboards and Twin and I both know. He pushes to his feet and I see his hands are balled up into fists he'll never use. When the footsteps stop outside our door, I stand, brace my shoulders. I didn't do anything wrong, Twin. Go back to your homework or your flirting or whatever. I didn't do anything at all. Ants. Mommy drags me by my shirt to her altar of the Virgin, pushes me down until I kneel. Look the Virgin Mary in the eye, girl. Ask for forgiveness. I bow my head hoping to find air in the tiles. My big is impossible to make tiny, but I try to make ant of myself. Don't make me get more rice. Mira la Santa Maria in the eye. I've learned that ants hold 10 times their weight. Look at her, muchacha, mírala. Can crawl through crevices, have no God but crumbs. Last chance, Xiomara. Santa Maria, llena eres de gracia. They will survive the apocalypse. Little brown ants and hill-building ants and fire ants, all red and... I am no ant. My mother yanks my hair, pulling my face up from the tiles, constructing a church arch of my spine until Mary's face is an inch from mine. I am no ant, only sharply torn, something broken in my mother's hand. Diplomas. This is why you want to go away for college? So you can open your legs for any boy with a big enough smile? You think I came to this country for this? So you can carry a diploma in your belly, but never a degree? Tú no vas a ser un maldito cuero. Cuero. She calls me to my face. The Dominican word for hoe. This is what a cuero looks like. A regular girl, pocketless jeans that draw grown men's eyes, long hair, a nose ring, a lip ring, a tongue ring, extra earrings, any ring but a diamond one on her left hand, skirts, shorts, tank tops, spaghetti straps. A cuero lets the world know she is hot. She can feel the sun. A spectacular girl with too much ass, too much lip, too much sass, hips that look like water, waiting to be spilled into the hands of thirsty boys. A plain girl, with nothing llamativo, nothing that calls attention. A forgotten girl, one who parts her hair down the middle, who doesn't have cleavage, whose mouth doesn't look like it is forever waiting. Un maldito cuero, I am a cuero, and they are right. I hope they are right. I am. I'll be anything that makes sense of this panic. I'll loosen myself from this painful flesh. See, a cuero is any skin. A cuero is just a covering. A cuero is a loose thing, tied down by no one, fluttering and waving in the wind, flying, flying, gone. Mommy says, there be no clean in men's hands. Even when the dirt has been scrubbed from beneath nails, when the soap scent from them suspends in the air, there be sins there. Their washed hands know how to make a dish rag of your spine. Wring your neck. Don't look for pristine handling when men use your tears for pine saw. They'll mop the floor with your pride. There'll be no clean there, girl. Their fingers were made to scratch dirt, to find it in the best of things. Make your heart a Brillo pad, brittle and steel. Don't be no damn sponge. Their fingers don't know to squeeze nicely. Nightly, if you imagine men's kisses, soft touches, a caress. Remember, Adam was made from clay.